tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another after-show AfterBuzz of House of Cards, Season 3, Episode 2, Chapter 28. I am Autumn Chiklis. My Twitter is at Autumn Chiklis, and my lovely co-hosts are...
Hi, I'm Quinn Skillian. You can find me on Twitter at Quinn Skillian. That's S-C-I-L-L-I-A-N.
Hi, and I'm Pegarad. You can find me at Pegarad on Twitter and Instagram.
Okay, ladies, so there was a beautiful opening shot to start this episode of Claire Underwood discussing her United Nations representation. And it was wonderful because it just, like, slowly encroached on her from the back. So you have this whole opening scene with Claire and Mendoza, and the big the military is irrelevant. So what are we thinking about this?
I thought it was... awesome to kind of come into this, and Claire was so on. Mm-hmm. She knew everything. She was like, you know, you're watching and you're just like, bam, she's probably right for this job. Yep. And it was just, you know, we have never, ever, ever seen, hardly ever, Claire Underwood lose her cool. And, like, she did it in the worst possible time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For me, there's nothing Claire can't do. And so I knew that something was happening. Like, I knew they were going to grill her. And when she lost it, I was, like, so shocked. Like, but of course, like, he was totally picking on her. Like, he was totally taking it out of context. The whole is irrelevant. And
you guys knew that he was trying to get a rise out of her?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, he's at the opposite party, and they have mm-hmm. this kind of weird relationship as it is. He was obviously grandstanding. Mm-hmm. And I don't blame her at all for losing her temper a little bit. That being said, unfortunately, what he brings up is, if you want to be the representative of the UN, you're going to have to keep your cool in all different kinds of intense situations, and not within your own country. So you have to be willing... You cannot be a hothead. You have to be able to keep your temper.
Yeah, I'm just surprised that she wouldn't have the wherewithal to know that that was what was happening. I think I usually give her a little more credit than that.
Well, there's also the thing to consider that she has never been in that kind of position for her. She's still a rookie when it comes to politics in general
and being in the limelight that way. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and being like the source of kind of, contention.
Especially when it's discourse. Because up until now, she's had this whole thing with sexual abuse, and she's been working for nonprofits, which she's been able, and she mentions all of this and as part of her credentials, but she's never been grilled before. Mm-hmm. What Frank has is plenty of, that she doesn't, is plenty of experience with people throwing things at her, her mm-hmm. taking them, calculating, and then pushing back without having a read statement that she's going to deliver. So this is her first time.
Or being broadcasted, like, live or whatever. Mm-hmm, yeah. I know that they made a really big deal about her being on TV a bunch, and I was wondering if there was another reason behind that.
Right. So it was her first time being kind of purposefully thrown.
Yeah.
Which is very common in politics, obviously, and things are taken out of context. But she, unfortunately, loses her cool. And it results in kind of a catastrophe, especially with the media. Frank is texted that kind of like, Claire Underwood, military is irrelevant. Mm-hmm. And it's all over the place. I love that the writers address social media in the way that they do now. Mm-hmm. And that they include the fact that Twitter is a thing and Facebook is a thing. And that it influences politics now.
Absolutely.
I love that he was sitting in his office or in his study or whatever, and he was doing work, but the TV was on with her, and it mm-hmm. was just like that cute, like he's supporting her, and she's out doing this big thing. And
or he was making sure she wasn't going to say anything stupid.
Yeah, that's true.
Like that. And of course, the second he looks away from the television. So you have this cool juxtaposition of scenes where you have Claire kicking ass initially, and then it jumps to Frank. And poor Frank has... finally made it to the top, only to be told that he should no longer be at the top. They do not want him to run for 2016.
Yeah, and you know, a big concern I had is in, you know, well, I guess we can get to that in a little bit, just about Heather Dunbar, but we can talk about that in a second.
Oh, Heather, okay, we'll get to that in a moment. But yeah, basically the leadership comes in and says, listen, we want a united party and we need a new face for the party and we need just basically to re-renovate, if we will, you're out. And we will not support you if you decide to run, including Jackie.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's interesting that, like, that a huge point of that was, like, you've been here 6 months and you haven't done anything yet. And it's like, well, how many times have we heard that?
Yeah. Was just so thrown back that it was so early on. Like, he still has 18 months until the elections. And, like, this soon, they're like, we don't want you anymore.
And he wasn't even concerned. He wasn't even thinking about that yet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It makes sense that because he was not an elected president, they would be so concerned. Because ultimately, it's not, as much as the ideal is we need to stand behind our sitting president no matter what, especially in modern politics, a lot of it is the politics of the party. And how do you make sure that your party stays in office more than necessarily an individual president?
Yeah. And so, also, you know, it's interesting, like I said, you know, with the last episode, watching Frank climb his way up tooth and nail and, you know, getting things kind of, you know, in a very, you know, maybe like under the table kind of way. We know that he can work that system. Can he stay on the top and win the popular vote? That's the question.
And it's a very difficult question, especially with social media now, where everything is being challenged and reporting is a very different process right now. And the world is kind of going through a shift. So here we have Frank, who did climb up tooth and nail, and not necessarily, he made a lot of enemies. And the problem with making a lot of enemies is now you're at the top and you didn't necessarily fairly make it there. He's not an elected president, so he doesn't have the benefit of having won 50% or more of the populist votes to begin with.
Yeah.
People do not like him. There's a lot of controversy surrounding his name.
Yeah. Exactly. And what I was going to say is that, like, what made me really nervous this episode is that Heather Dunbar came in for a meeting to talk about someone who had gotten
about the guy Muhammad who got his legs blown off. Yes.
And how they were going to handle that situation publicly, because that was like a CIA issue and that was like the whole thing. Right. And my problem was that Frank had just heard that the leadership didn't want him to run for president in 2016. He couldn't even think about this issue, which was his presidential issue. He couldn't even give a moment's thought to his actual job because he was so nervous about keeping the power, not necessarily about doing the best thing he could while he had it now.
Yeah.
And that made me really nervous.
Well, this episode was the first time, really, we've seen the Underwoods crack under pressure. They've shown weakness, they've shown moments, but you've seen both of them break down in a way in this episode. And it was awful and awesome at the same time. Because to see these two people who have always been these pillars of strength shift is just fascinating to watch. And you want to see them, you want to see them win, despite the fact that they're kind of despicable people.
Yeah. It's weird when you get to the top where there's nobody else to manipulate up there. And now all you're left is with the people who are below you who start to have more power over you than you thought.
Which is why the end of this episode is absolutely brilliant. And I was fist pumping in the air at the end of it. But we'll get to that. But yeah, when you're at the top, you just have more people clawing at you from the top. It's lonely at the top. So here he is and he's not handling it in the best way. So you have that. And then of course, Claire has her mess up. So she has to go and talk to the individual senators because she's lost a lot of popular opinion in the Senate because they don't think she can handle the job or they think it will reflect poorly. Nepotism is a question as it is already. So here we have her desperately calling people in that wonderful montage.
Wonderful. She's like, I'm waking people up now.
Oh my God, it's too late. I have to do this in the morning. But she, her making phone calls to the senators, trying to persuade them that she to at least talk to people. And Frank,
this is the problem I was having, was when I was talking about earlier about them not working together as a team anymore. It's a perfect example, this montage of Frank making calls to make sure that he has people in his pocket. She's making calls to call senators to make sure that they will reconsider in this whole thing, or she makes sure that they're going to be on, you know, voting for her. And they're, you know, and it's just them to just, you know, basically promoting their own agendas and not working together anymore. That's terrifying.
And another thing, I don't know, think that we brought this up, but they're sleeping in separate beds this season.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Not that, I don't know if we saw it in the previous seasons, but it's very apparent that this one, it's like, this is my room. And she blames it on like a cold at first, but you know, we're seeing the separation of them that I'm kind of getting a little nervous about.
I know. There's power in numbers, and right now they're two very lonely numbers.
Well, what was great about it, this episode is you have the two sides of that, because you had that montage where they were separate and obviously failing, and then later in the episode, which we will get to very soon, they come together in more ways than one, and that's when things start
come
going.
Come together.
Wow. Lovely. But they once they do, things start picking up for them again, because it's clear that they are stronger as a unit than they are individually.
Exactly.
But I digress. I jump ahead. We see Stamper once again, but he was not a large part of this episode. Seth calls him, and this was interesting. I wanted to hear your guys' take on it, because Seth calls him and prevents him from drinking through the syringe in the weirdest possible manner, which he's doing by himself now, which was an interesting understanding.
He's basically just falling off the wagon one entirely. Little, you know, syringe full at a time.
Yeah, and he puts it down because he thinks that Seth is coming over. That phone call was weird. I remember that phone call being very, very strange.
Was that a phone call or text?
Oh, you're right, that was text. But and then, that was text, and Seth and Frank have a conversation about him really quickly, saying, will you please check up on him? And then later, Seth goes and visits him in a very kind of awkward, interesting...
Because Seth had written an email. Or, I mean, rather, Stamper had written an email about, you know, kind of thoughts when it came to lobbying Amworks.
Yes.
And he wanted to make sure that Seth was going to send it to Frank. And that's what I think that conversation was. It was basically him being like, will you check up on him? Oh, by the way, he sent you this email. And Frank being like, oh, send that to me. Which is, like, kind of nice.
Yeah. So, we have a minor check-in on Stamper, but that pretty much, the conclusion of that is he is not in a good, healthy place.
No, but it's interesting, like, the only thing that could get Stamper not to drink is...
Frank. Exactly. And, unfortunately, Frank does not have time for him right now.
Yeah.
He's being kind to him, but he has bigger fish to fry.
I know, but I think that, I really do think that Frank is just keeping his distance from Doug, because he knows that, you know, having Doug back in his camp could potentially be a really bad move for him, because he's linked to some pretty shady stuff.
Yeah.
So I think that's basically why Frank is keeping Doug's at arm length right now.
I agree.
Or just being really, really nice to him so that he can find Rachel and get rid of her, because she knows a lot too. So it's like, do your duty, get rid of her. Stick, you know, to my good side, because, like, he can't afford to have him talking.
Yeah. Other interesting developments. Jackie and Remy's conversation.
Yeah.
And the pseudo-fake date, if you will.
Yeah.
Her announcing, or revealing, rather, that she wants VP.
Mm-hmm.
That she wants to be VP on the ticket.
She just doesn't feel like she is a big enough player on the leadership right now. I think she feels pretty much useless.
Mm-hmm.
And she knows basically how to get what she wants.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Remy's like, no, that's too much. Like, what you're asking for is just not equivalent to what we want.
Yeah. God, what an interesting character. Jackie.
And she and Remy aren't sleeping together anymore.
No.
Were they at the end of last season?
Not, I don't think at the end of last season.
I couldn't remember if it was when I was watching the episode, I couldn't remember if seeing her sleep with another guy was supposed to be like a startling kind of moment for us or not.
Right, no, I don't think they were sleeping together at the very end of the episode.
Okay.
Or season. But, yeah, she's such an interesting character, because she's someone who's very comparable to Frank in her ambition and her willingness to get her hands dirty to get there.
Absolutely.
Which is dangerous, obviously, because she is a shark, a brutal one at that. And now she has her eyes set very similarly to what Frank wanted, which is, I want to be VP. And wanting to be VP, and she has Frank undertones to her, so...
But, you know, Frank's VP right now seems kind of dispensable. I mean, aren't all VPs, but you know.
But, like, Frank, my point is, Frank used the vice presidency position in order to become a standing president.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm just wondering about how much weight Frank would actually put on that decision if it got him where he wanted to stay. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. more to the point, though, you have this character development with Jackie, or not really character development, more of plot development, because we know that she's brutal, but she is asking for quite a bit. And now there's Remy, which leads us to Remy. I'm very confused as to where his loyalties lie.
Me as well.
I'd like to think that they're with Frank. That being said, first of all, there's the sexual element, and it's undeniable when you are attracted to someone, when you care about someone, which he clearly does, despite the fact that she's just a raging bitch to him, and when you are have had sexual relations with someone consistently, it's hard to believe that you can suddenly work in such close quarters with them and not have a hard time betraying them or going against them. So I don't know if he will necessarily always be in Frank's camp. I think it's Frank versus head here.
So you think Remy's going to be end up going to be kind of like a little bit of a switch hitter when it comes to...
Kind of. I think he might be a switch hitter. I think that he's going to try to keep himself towards the middle and try to stay out of it, but he won't be able to. Yeah. He's going to have to go to one or the other side at some point. It's inevitable, and that will end up bloody.
Yeah, definitely. We're definitely going to see that come to fruition sooner or later.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we have the montage with Claire and Frank falling apart. One of my favorite quotes was, "Money gives power, a run for its money."
oh, yeah.
And then you have Jackie talking to the reporter and divulging the information.
In a very vague way.
Yeah, in the most kind of like, I think you can piece together what I'm saying.
Because I'm saying something, you just have to figure out what it is.
Yeah, in a very kind of like Sherlock Holmes way.
I know.
But she's talking about Amworks and mentions the fact that they were only in the room for 4 minutes. Or the meeting was 4 minutes, even though they were there for an hour. Mm-hmm. And basically expects her to run with that. I didn't even know exactly what she was getting at. She was trying to divulge something. I just don't know what it was and whether or not she got away with it.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, because Syed was like, well, he couldn't have been called away. We know he wasn't called away. So, obviously, there was a decision made. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you could probably pretty much guess what that might have been.
Yeah, like, they didn't even give it that much thought. They just shut down the idea completely in mm-hmm. 4 minutes.
In 4 minutes.
Right. And then we get to broken down Frank crying in his office. Is it the first time we see him really broken down like
I think
that?
I thought he was having a heart attack for half a second. I was like, oh my God. Yeah.
That would have been brutal. But no, he's just crying.
Yeah.
Which is understandable, I think. I think I would be crying a lot earlier. in the process.
Pretty much the whole episode.
He looks in the camera and he's like, I hate having to call the founder of Facebook who, remember that part?
Oh, yeah,
it's like to ask for money.
Like, I hate having to like call someone who, but like still hadn't had his balls dropped by the time
he was on Facebook. That was so funny.
Oh, hi.
Yeah. That was awesome.
And this scene, between Frank and Claire, when she walks in and he's crying, and her immediate response is to lay him down and take his pants off and sleep with him. The first
Not
time
right
we've seen
on
them
there, pretty much,
yeah, just hopping right on. But the first time we've seen them intimate together, just the two of them, which is very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird whenever they are romantic with each other. It's like this level of like it's a connection, but it doesn't always seem like necessarily a romantic one. It's like a way for them to help each other, even though it doesn't seem like this kind of... Maybe towards the end of that scene, it started to feel like they were connecting a little bit, but it didn't feel like they were having sex because they wanted to have sex with each other.
Right.
It felt like we have an issue to solve, and this is how we're going to solve
yes.
it.
Yes. Yeah.
And they definitely were much more connected by the end of
yes.
it and the next day.
In the next day, exactly.
He was, like, on another level the next day.
He was, like, he was thrilled. She's like, I haven't gotten laid in forever.
Yeah.
Awesome. I can totally handle the deteriorating country.
Yeah.
What was interesting to me, or what really kind of fascinated me, was this idea. I think it was season one where he said, everything is about sex except sex, and sex is about power.
Mm-hmm.
And in this instance, it's kind of clear that sex is power for both of them. So they have this very, very intimate moment, obviously. And then the next day, he's ready to go, he has ideas, and both of them are... Not both of them back on their A game, because Claire obviously loses the vote, but Frank is right back in the ball game, and Claire is ready to support him again. So it's starting to look like at the end of that episode, okay, they're back and they have something up their sleeve, and they're going to do the dynamic duo thing that they've always done.
It's a new day.
Yes.
But I just want to go back really quick to that whole scene. Like, it starts out with her wanting to go for a jog, which she always does. We see her running a lot from previous seasons.
Right. But with her security detail.
Yeah, so Meacham comes along. And just the whole, like, music and, like, that build, it was so cinematic and beautiful. Like, she walks in and I just remember the music so clearly.
The opera.
Like, yeah.
And I just love the way they use DC as such a, DC itself is a character in this show. I love the way that they use that city so, it's so personal to the show. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, bringing up opera. One of the reasons that I love the show is it is very Richard III. It has
It's ubiquitous. It absolutely is.
Yeah. And so they aren't afraid. They don't shy away from those elements. They use opera. They use these big kind of cinematic gestures, which obviously stem from theater.
Yeah.
To not indicate, because that just sounds so mediocre, but
totally maybe remind us of like a
To give us that feeling. They don't shy away from that. They embrace it. And
just to, like, remember, this has been happening forever.
Yeah, this has been happening.
This is not new.
Yeah, this has been happening forever. It's not new. And they draw on devices where, if you're a theater and film nerd like me, you kind of freak out and, you know, get really, really excited because they are kind of taking these elements of theatricality. And traditionally, with the opera, you always have these great tragedies where you have the romances and what have you, and they end horribly. And we kind of all know it's a house of cards. We all know it's not going to end beautifully for the Underwoods. We know that. It can't. So it's just a reminder, and I love the fact that they aren't afraid to go there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're not shying away from the symbolism, as we've talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm. So,
next day, he wakes up. He walks into that room with everybody, and he's like,
"We're gonna figure out a plan."
Yeah, we're gonna figure this out. Either you're with me or you're not.
Yep.
He said, "Oh, the balance the egg thing because Claire loses."
God, how funny was it? Was her having to choose the eggs for the Easter egg roll while she's waiting to hear about the? It's like it was like the perfect like the most menial task a first lady could do compared with like the most important nomination of her life. I thought that was like absolutely beautiful.
She loses, obviously. She speaks beautifully to the press. She's obviously devastated. Oh, yeah. My heart broke for her because she is flawless.
But did you guys think she... I mean, I didn't think she was going to win.
No, of course not. No. Of course she wasn't going to. Yeah. But still, I want to see her become the badass that she is meant to become. She is so fierce. But this whole thing leads to Frank with the egg saying, "Have you ever tried to balance an egg? You can't fight physics." And then the epiphany of, no, you can't fight physics. You can't swim against the tide. You have to kind of go with what life hands you. The wheels start turning, and the brilliant ending of his speech, which, fantastic, the idea of transparency when it's not actually, we'll get there. But, yes, he talks about Amherst and basically says, "I'm not going to run in 2016. You are going to back Amherst, and we are going to..."
Amherst?
Yeah, Amherst.
Sorry, I was like, is there something that I didn't know?
No, Amherst, sorry. Okay. Amworks, America Works. We're going to push this through, and if we don't, we're going to effing try.
I think Frank's whole thing is that, like, the last thing he would ever be is a sitting duck president.
Yes.
And, you know, his angle is, like, I can use this. Mm-hmm. I can use this to push through this, you know, piece of legislature that is, you know, not dissimilar to probably other pieces of, you know, legislature that, like, other presidents have tried to push through, but have had to go through, like, so much snipping and cutting before it even doesn't even resemble the bill it was supposed to be.
Yeah,
and now he's like, I can use this because I don't have to worry about what anybody else is trying to do. I don't have to worry about getting, you know, whatever. He's like, this is my bill. This is what it's going to be.
This is going to be my legacy.
You guys are on board with this bill, not something like this bill. This bill.
Which is a very ballsy thing to do. Yeah. Because we see it time and time again in real politics and in the world of House of Cards and any of the crossover, that because we live in a country with multiple parties, two plus independents and the various... How many are there right now, actually?
35. That's a lie. I don't think so.
But there are 35 parties. Bipartisan, absolutely not.
Yeah.
But because we live in this kind of government setup, it is important that And it obviously ends up that we kind of go back and forth and negotiate. Whether or not we actually do that all the time is kind of iffy. But never, ever, ever is a piece of legislature put through without serious compromise.
Oh, yeah.
Serious compromise. I mean, look at the most recently, like the Affordable Care Act and all of the hell that it had to go through to even get something resembling it to be put on the table. And people are still freaking out about it. So for something like $500 billion was the number, $500 billion dollars.
And to cut something that is so, and they keep talking about how vital these entitlements are to the American dream.
And he says,
you work and work.
Yeah.
Oh my God, his speech. Okay.
Like not the American dream anymore.
Speech, yeah.
The American dream is to
We're
have
lying.
A job.
We're lying to the American people.
Okay. Yeah. So
go for it,
man. To my favorite part of this entire show right now, like all of the seasons, his speech, because he talks about entitlement, which is something that I actually have, it's a hot button for me, and says point blank, you are not entitled to anything. And repeats it, you are not entitled to anything, America. The American dream is dead.
So good.
And so it's the transparency, or this, I guess, idea of transparency, which you know that the people want to see. And you know what? Damn, the writers are so good. That's what a lot of people in America right now are desperately asking for. So you have kind of this meta thing going on, or at least I think so, where he's saying, listen, I understand that you think that you're entitled to all these things. You're not, because what America was founded on was hard work, not entitlement. So we are going to put you to work. It was a very powerful speech. It was completely different than anything that had ever been introduced on that show before, and what it seemed like was anything in politics ever in that universe.
Yeah.
And what it has done now is placed him in a position where not only can he do whatever the hell he wants, pretty much, because he doesn't have to worry about the candidacy now, or candidacy now, he can do whatever he wants, and also he is so focused on creating this legacy and pushing it through that by giving the American people what they supposedly want, which is transparency and candidness, which is what they've been asking for this whole time, his approval ratings may just from that skyrocket, because they think that he is the person
who's actually going to get something done.
He's going to get something done. Yeah.
Exactly.
Someone has balls in
that's
Congress.
The plan.
Someone, that's the plan. And you know what? Freaking brilliant. Genius angle.
I know. I remember in the first episode, they said something like, you can't do this because you're going to have about 1,000 special interest groups that are going to come at you.
Yep.
And I mean, they sure will.
Oh my God, it's going to be a shit show.
I know.
What they're going to have to go through is crazy, but he doesn't care anymore. Mm-mm. And what's amazing is now he's going to get stuff done. No one gets stuff done in the office in that way. So it's going to make, unless America Works is a disaster, which it could be, by the way, but as of right now, what it looks like, or at least if we're going to talk about predictions, is that it is going to make people realize that he's actually pushing forward and doing something. What was the quote? It was, he talked about Roosevelt and compared it to the New Deal.
Oh, yeah.
It's some really, really nice rhetoric. And I was just, I was so happy.
Yeah, I know. we're looking to build jobs and
we must try something. That's what it was. We must try something.
Infrastructure, military, private sector. That's where we're looking to build jobs.
Yep. And it was a beautifully composed speech. Whoever writes the House of Cards speeches should talk to President Obama.
We keep talking about like the parallels, and I'm just wondering, like, would it even be possible to write a show like this without it reflecting, you know, a real life
kind of situation? I mean, I go back and forth on this topic because they, like, for example, they make him a liberal, which I think was a very specific reason.
Especially because he's from the South.
Because he's from the South. I think that they're, in ways, they're absolutely trying to make it mirror life, and in ways, they're absolutely trying to oppose perception of what, or kind of stereotypes. Because you will have people, I'm sure if they had made him a Republican, there would be they would alienate a sector of the population going, oh, you're just saying that all Republicans are evil. Because, like, especially when you're producing a Hollywood show starring Kevin Spacey and Robin Wright about, you know, if you made them conservative, you could see why people would maybe think that it was a statement. So I think that they...
This is Hollywood after
Exactly. So I think they intentionally kind of go against certain things that people might consider reality.
Stereotypes,
which aren't necessarily always true, but just as a way to make the show both have credibility, but also not necessarily always be a commentary.
It's so hard to watch this show without kind of, you know, without thinking about the parallels. You know what I mean?
By the way, like, now every time I watch politics, like this recent thing with Boehner and Netanyahu, I'm like, this is like something out of House of Cards.
The president's back. Especially when you have Frank on Colbert, it's so hard to try and like just distance it to just be like, no, it's a show. Just watch it like you're watching anything else. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
But I think that's probably the point.
So now the ending was Claire saying, "Hey, you need. I want this."
Frank ends up having the meeting with Dunbar.
You're right. It does go very well.
At least he's, you know, he's kind of got this, like, newfound sense of, like, get it done.
Yes. And Claire's backing him on that, too.
Yeah.
And so then Claire comes in and says, I want you to resubmit me. And he agrees.
In 2 seconds flat.
Boom. Just like, yes, I will.
Right after I eat this peanut butter and jelly.
Yeah.
And then she goes and throws up in the sink.
And
the two eggs. She's pregnant.
That not on the nose?
That's what I thought. She's pregnant.
Yeah. I know, but it just felt weird because it was like usually you see like sickness in the morning, and I was like, "Are you sure?" Was she just so surprised that she threw up?
I love it. It's always like, "Oh, you threw up, and therefore you're pregnant." When it's normally, I mean, apparently that's a myth. I've not been with child, but
in a family way.
So I have heard that if you, when you're pregnant, that morning sickness is actually, that's a myth. It's whenever sickness.
Okay.
But.
I guess you just mean like in TV, it's always in the morning.
By the way, in TV, it's always throwing up. It's never like cramps. It's never like, oh, I missed a period. It's always like, oh, I'm
vomiting. I'm pregnant. I know exactly.
And no one ever assumes food poisoning. It's like, you are pregnant. Yeah. But then, of course, the confirmation was very on the nose, and there comes the opera again as she cooks the two eggs on the pan.
Yeah, like stares off, like, oh, it was such a powerful moment.
So what do we think
How
about
old is Claire, by the way?
I thought that too. Ageless, timeless. Well,
I mean, like obviously they're going to be able to afford like the best doctors in the country, so we don't have to worry about that. But I was just wondering.
I'm not sure. She's timeless.
Say late 40s.
She's ageless.
Late 40s.
Late 40s, really?
Yeah. Yeah. Early 40s. It's got to be.
Yeah, probably early 40s.
Late 40s would be maybe a little scary.
That's true.
Yeah. Early 40s is still like a little spooky, but
yeah,
maybe not quite.
Think they definitely weren't expecting children.
No, but they were trying at the end. But weren't they trying a little bit last season?
Oh yeah, you're right.
It was definitely a conversation piece, especially when she was talking about that she had an abortion and.
Oh, right. Wasn't it, like, a political move or something? Like, was it, like, kind of them talking about... Or did they have an intimate moment with, like, maybe we should have kids?
Maybe. No. But I also love that, like, the same episode that they had sex in that she found out she was pregnant. I was like, yep, that's when she got pregnant right then.
Yeah, of course. Because God knows when they've had sex before that for a while.
Yeah.
But of course the one time.
It was, like, a day later.
But
that was an awesome time if that was going to be the time.
Yeah.
That was a...
Exactly.
Like, powerful.
Do you know how you were conceived?
Yeah.
When Daddy was losing his position as presidency.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a story.
Storybook. Storybook.
Oof. But yeah, now you have little Underwoods potentially on the way. Which, first of all, that adds an entirely new element because sympathy for Claire. The universe loves a pregnant woman, as they should. But nothing attracts sympathy and the love of the public like a pregnant woman who is so excited for a family because family values, you know, new life, excitement, hope, all of those different ideals. So now you're going to have a pregnant Claire, which adds a whole new element, and God knows how her wardrobe might fit in with that. I'm sure she'll look fabulous, as always.
She's going to have the most beautiful baby bump we've ever seen.
Ever. Oh, yeah. It's just perfect.
Little tiny one.
Super, super symmetrical. Yeah. Right where it ought to be.
She'll have embellishes on her dress around her pregnant stomach. The little Underwood. So what do we think about the possibility of kids for them? How do we think it's going to affect them?
Well, I mean, it definitely changes. I mean, I don't know if we ever thought Frank was going to go to jail. But if he gets incarcerated, I mean... That's huge. You start thinking about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, incarcerated, honestly, I would... I was gonna say I'm not gonna go with death yet, but God knows it's not impossible.
I mean he's done some things that could definitely land him, you know, what, jail plus 20?
Life plus 20 rather.
You know what I mean?
All of the murder and treason.
Yeah. Right. So I'm just saying, like, it adds a different, you know, I don't know if we, if I don't even know if I think he's gonna be arrested, but it definitely, now I'm thinking about it.
But it also adds another human element to them, because when you have a kid, how is Frank going to be as a father? Like, how is Claire going to be as a mother? You know what I mean? Once you have a child, not everyone's meant to have kids. Mm-hmm. Not everyone likes kids. I feel like Claire will. I think Claire will... My prediction would be that Claire would love the hell out of that baby.
I think she's longed to be a mother for a very long time.
Yes, I don't know. I think Frank, it could soften Frank, or it could do the exact opposite. He could either turn into his father, who he hates anyway, mm-hmm. Because he never had one, mm-hmm. pretty much, or he will kind of try to break the cycle, and it will touch on his humanity.
Yeah.
So
I feel like Claire would be the one raising that child, and Frank will just go on doing his thing.
It's interesting because, you know, they don't love each other in a very traditional way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so to bring in a child would be asking them to have a very traditional kind of love, mm-hmm. for that kid. And I think that that's asking a lot of these two people.
Absolutely.
I can't see it. I don't want to see it. I don't want it.
It's going to be weird. I don't know.
She can't lose another kid. I mean, that would be crazy.
Yeah.
No. And it's, I don't think that she will.
I think she'll come to full term.
Yeah. And she'll have a kid. Yeah. And if that's the case, that kid is in danger. And it's just a lot. It's a different element and a different feeling to the show that we haven't had before, because a kid brings in all of this different humanity.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. And I think that's our show.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Right. Oh, my goodness. Okay. So, thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Please catch us on YouTube, iTunes, and SoundCloud. And you can use the hashtag ABTVHOC. And for personal information, all right, I am Autumn Chiklis. You can find me on Twitter at Autumn Chiklis and Instagram at Autumn Chiklis.
You keep it so simple. My name is Quinn Skillian. You guys can find me on Twitter at Quinn Skillian. You can find me on Instagram at Quinstagram. And you can find me on Vine at the Quinn Bee. Please tweet me. I want to talk about this show all week.
I know. I'm in the same boat.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Pegarad. And tweet me, too. Tweet, what's our thing? ABTVHOC. Let's get a discussion going.
Don't make me go home week without talking about
it. All right, guys, thank you so much. We will see you next week for episode 3 and 4.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.